Shall we start back again? I'm just conscious there was someone at the back who had your hand up, and then perhaps we could move a discussion on to a wider debate around the whole issue of the no platforming. We've sort of covered the history behind it and how do we move on from here, so if you'd like to.
So I turned 30 last week, and I'm pretty safe to say that I'm probably one of the youngest people here. And none of my peers know that I'm here. I would be vilified if I was here, if they knew that I was here. I saw your comment on Facebook earlier this morning. I was like, oh, there's going to be one person that I know from Radio YFS that's going to be here. I don't mean this to come across rude, but I think of people who are my peers and younger, talking about language is a completely different scenario. The conversation we're having is almost missing the boat, because among circles I walk in, even talking about biological sex is considered transphobic. Mm-hmm. So you cannot talk about pregnancy as a woman's issue, you cannot talk about periods. We don't talk about menopause because no one's kind of thinking about that yet. When you talk about women's issues, you know, and mention body parts, that's, you cannot do that. And that is something, you know, obviously I don't want to cause violence or harm to anybody, but when I want to talk about, well, we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, when you talk about, okay, so in this situation, for example, you talk about in the developing world when girls don't go to school because there isn't any toilets, there isn't the provisions there to deal with sanitary. That can be taken and be like, well, that's transphobic because you're talking about menstruation as an issue.
This is true.
And it's like, so that's, you know, how do you talk about the body in a way that is, where gender and the body is together, without being hurtful? And like, that's kind of where I'm like, well, I don't want to cause violence to anybody or harm, but then you can't talk about the body, about vaginas being female, being woman's. You can't talk about penises being.
Who's saying you can't? Sorry, can I just ask who's saying
this is people who are feminists. Who are young people who use the internet. You know, I don't want to be patronising, but the circles that I run in, you know, where people are very vocal about the rights for trans people not to have violence. It goes to an extent where you cannot talk about the body being innately man or woman. So this is why I say that you've missed the boat, because talking about he and she, well, that's over there, you know. And Sarah Ahmed said something interesting. So she's an academic that is down in London. Her books are quite hard to read, but her Twitter is quite digestible. She's very influential. She does interesting things. And one of the things that struck me, she said, is when we talk about, when we try and define what womanhood is, that's where we run into difficulty. And Miranda says something interesting about the essence of a woman. Now, if body parts, if biological sex does not determine who you're, even sex, even gender, you know, it's if it's just about identity, then what are the boundaries? Do we have boundaries? Are they useful? I think they are useful because you can't talk about perpetrators, you can't talk about male violence if man doesn't exist. Also, womanhood becomes this nebulous thing. Are we just defined then? Is the essence of womanhood just oppression? Because that's kind of the route you come to when it's like, well, trans people are definitely oppressed by violence, by bullying, whatever. Women are definitely oppressed. The only people that don't seem to be oppressed are men. Now, is that how we define it?
No,
from that seems massively negative.
From this nonsense, there is, woman doesn't exist. It's just an idea and an identity that anyone can appropriate. You know, I mean, a friend told me recently she was at the anarcho-feminist conference where there was a safe space monitor shouting through a loudhailer every hour, "We will not tolerate transphobia, biphobia, blah, 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 phobia." Sexism never gets a mention. And, you know, and literally a white man with a beard stood up and said, "How dare you misgender me? I'm a trans woman of colour." and nobody says anything. This is utter nonsense. And we can't pretend it isn't. It doesn't matter what concessions we make or what identities we support people in adopting or the rights of any individual. It's utter nonsense. And the notion that talking about female genital mutilation is transphobic, that complaining about biological facts that women have to endure that define us and that oppress us is transphobic, is male appropriation of women's oppression for their own benefit. Let's be clear about this. It's completely topsy-turvy. I was going to East Africa to do a story earlier this year on a tribe of women, a nomadic pastoral tribe, who have escaped the most horrendous violence, from being raped by British soldiers to then going home to their villages and being told by their husbands or the village elders that they are responsible for being raped, that girls end up in this village, which is a refuge, but it's an open village, because 12-year-olds are being forcibly married to 67-year-old men in polygamous marriages, FGM, no schooling, no sanitary protection, and horrendous disease from drinking dirty water, etc. And I was just getting ready to go, and I'd had all my jabs, and I was thinking, wow, this is literally going to be completely... What do I take? Do I take sanitary towels for the girls? Do I... You know, and I was thinking about what a very, very different experience this was going to be. And my editor rang me up and said, Julie, I'm afraid I've got some bad news. He said, the Samburu women, they've said that you're no platformed at their village because you're transphobic. It was a joke. He was being very funny. Because, like, these girls and women will give two fucks. You know, this is a human rights issue when people are being discriminated against and bullied against because of difference. Let's be honest about this. But the notion that we stop saying that one of the physical realities is, even if we don't have a uterus, you know, there are physical realities for women and girls that lead to our discrimination and oppression. We're not defined by whether we menstruate or not. Some women might not ever menstruate. But let's be clear about it. FGM affects girls. It's not being oppressive to trans women to say, sorry about that, that you weren't FGM'd, or that we're leaving you out of this conversation. Because this is something that growing up as a boy means that you escape. It's shit. So what do we do about it? We knock that right down. I mean, what kind of lunacy are we living in that we are now being screamed at by men, like I say, men who identify as men, who now can shut us up as feminists when we say something like menstruation or the menopause or being, you know, endangering childbirth or being defined by pregnancy or not having children, that is transphobic. It's taking our oppression and disadvantage and giving it to the oppressor who wants to play with it for their identity. No. Come on. I mean, let's just please be real about this. It's really gone too far. It really has.
Okay.
Thanks to the organisers for doing this. It's a really rare opportunity to come together. And thanks very much, everyone who's take part in the platform here, for being brave and speaking. What did I speak the truth to power, they say. I think that there's a kind of undercurrent thing going on that we need to somehow try and address. And I think, you know, it's to do with the actual definition of what is real. You know, you're talking about what's really going on and so on. And, yeah, we talk about meaning as being socially constructed, and, of course, largely that's done through words. I don't think it's exclusively done through words, but I'm quite a minority voice there in saying that. But I think that the fact that the philosophies that have underpinned it, not only the philosophical departments in universities, but also increasingly the so-called social studies departments, and particularly, of course, the women's studies and then gender studies, and now some homeless people looking for, so hence queer studies, etc. That's the issue. So these academics who are, you know, ivory tower, mountaintop philosophical thinkers, I'm all for that. I'm fine with that. Right? The world is deep, the sky is deep, life is deep. And I'm also actually an intellectual and to some extent academic as well, although obviously maths and stuff rather than social studies. But that's where we need to actually take them on. What is the meaning of reality? How do we construct what is real? And of course, what we're inheriting then is the children of that. You know, the chickens are coming home to roost with that. You know, if we can just say a thing is what it is because I say it, or because we agree it is what it is. And of course, meanwhile, we've all chucked Marx out with the bathwater, you know. That's the issue. How do we bring accountability in some sort of material basis to the 21st century, right? In a climate where, you know, for fuck's sake, they're telling us that 98%, what is it, 75% of reality is dark matter and dark energy. And, you know, the atoms at my fingertips, some of them are definitely on the other side of the universe as I speak and all that, you know. I mean, these are... And we've got that, and we've also got the situation which we are all, I'm definitely part of, sorry, I can't speak for anyone else, I beg your pardon, which is that we don't know how to debate. We don't know how to debate. I mean, yeah. I argue, obviously, you know, furiously with family and all that, I mean, we've stopped speaking. Increasingly, people stop speaking, the people that I care about, the people that I have most in common with, arguably, the people that I love, I don't speak to. And they don't speak to me.
Well, we've had massive debates, and then we're friends.
Fuck off.
We agree. She told me to fuck off. She did the worst thing that anyone can do, which is unfriend you on Facebook. Then we're back talking again. And the reason why, and you're absolutely right, Kate, the reason why I mentioned this story that I was doing on the Samburu women is because this is a highly privileged debate of these students who are white and really privileged, all like Sarah Ahmed, who has a very, very strong identity of her ethnicity, which is material and real for her. Funny how it's only the category of woman that manages to be a floating signifier. So that's the thing that we can all do away with and anyone can appropriate. But her race and her ethnic identity, she makes very clear in her writing and in her debates that's you know, absolutely solid. And of course, you know, like all of the women that would take Sarah Ahmed's position on there's no such thing as a woman, they all, to a person, support sex workers' rights as the right of the individual to empower herself by being prostituted. And I think that we can't ignore that division as well. There's something going on which is a wider thing, and that's why I mentioned neoliberalism. It's the rights of the individual to define their own individual experience, to throw away the collective experience and politics of feminism, and more broadly the left, and to just say, what defines me, I will decide. Mm-hmm. Which is why we've now got people screaming in meetings at feminists, I'm a trans woman of colour, when they're a white man, mm-hmm. and telling us that we're not allowed to talk about women being pregnant. We have to say people being pregnant. And yet pregnancy, and all the absence of it, is one of the things that oppresses and defines women. So how can we possibly dismiss that?
Miranda, and then Ruthie had your hand up, and then Rebecca. Should we do it in that order?
That's fine with me. I detected some scepticism about the anecdotes that Julie was saying about these things, but as to what's real and what's not, and what you were saying as well about the use of language, which we come back to. This is actually happening in the real world. I'm totally with you with what you were saying about us kind of missing the boat of the use of language, and that the way that you can't people can't talk about women's experiences without people taking offence, and this is actually what it is properly Orwellian. This is what Orwellian actually means. It's an overused term, but this is properly Orwellian. Now, I got into a bit of a fight on Twitter once.
No. It's been going on about 18 months, I think.
With somebody a couple of weeks ago who defined themselves as being a woman and a woman of colour, even though they were as white as I am. And they came out with some really weird, strange argument about stuff, and I just thought, I'm going to close this down. Don't want to speak to you anymore. I said, look, you need to read a book, you need to learn about what mummies and daddies do, here's a book you should read. And I sent them a screen grab of the Ladybird Book of the Body. And their response was, I'm not reading that turf shit. You should read Whipping Girl by Julia Serrano. And I'm like, it's the Ladybird Book of the Body, for God's sake.
Mummy, will you read me a bedtime story? How about Julia Serrano?
I don't know if anybody here's read Julia Serrano. Sorry?
I read half of it, then I had to stop reading it. Well, she got to the point where she said that the second wave feminists were masculine women, that's when I stopped.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, femininity is a positive thing because it's innate to people. I mean, it's like, oh my God, it's like word salad. And the point about male violence is a huge problem. It comes back to what I was saying about language, comes back to what I was saying about naming the problem. There is a huge issue within the wider transgender community in that they do not like the term male violence because they think but that includes trans women. Oh, it's violence committed by men because trans women don't commit acts of violence. We've got news for you, mate. Trans women do commit acts of violence. They commit acts of violence before, during, and after transition. They're guilty of all sorts of crimes, and they do. There is a single study, I believe, of the incidence of crime before and after transition, and it's about the same as it is for men. You know, no surprise, because trans women are socialised male. Mm. But the biggest problem that I'm finding with trans women is they will not accept the concept of male socialisation, and they will not identify that and work on it and understand the real effect that has within their lives. And also, it comes back to what you were saying about language, about this, that and the other being transphobic. If trans people are going to achieve anything, we've got to be brave. And that means that we've got to come to terms with who and what we are and not rely on dogma as a way of getting through our lives. We need to be forward looking, we need to progress, not exist on ideas that are dead in the water before they even start.
Woman right at the back who behind Rebecca, if you've got anything, sorry, if you've got anything to add to that at all before we move on.
Explore the idea of, you know, the essence of womanhood. It's like, well, what, you know, I have always... This is so hard to talk about because I can't talk about it without feeling like I'm going to upset somebody. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I can't say I'm a woman without saying cis at the front of it, even though I reject that term. Mm-hmm. Because then that is transphobic. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know... So Janet Mock did an interview with a trans model. Was it Janet Mock? A trans model did an interview with a newsreader, and they switched it round where they were asked all the questions: when did you know you were cis? How do you know? How do you know your body is female? All these questions, the questions that are posed to trans women in a bullying manner. So, you know, I feel that I know I'm a woman, and you know. And that's my identity, you know. And it is interesting when Julie said that she doesn't feel like a woman. She knows she's been treated like one. Without being individualistic, without being neoliberal, how do we separate our identity with our treatment, or actually the way we're treated in society is a really useful signifier for showing, okay, this is an oppression. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take it all away, it's just this cloud of oppression that's not, how can you deal with structural violence if you don't know what the structure is?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why the identity of woman is useful while there's still structural power and oppression, because how do we know how many of us are paid less than men? And you know, you can't know how many women are raped and how little justice that we get if we don't hold on to that. So a problem with getting rid of gender now as a social experiment, or gender categories, and we're all just people, is that that violence and that oppression will go on to us as women, because that's how the power structure works, and we won't be able to document it. And that's why it's utter nonsense when academics like Sarah Ahmed say things like, you know, there's no such thing as the category of woman and you should reject it and it's transphobic. Because she would argue very, very passionately that you have to keep a note of racially motivated violence and abuse towards people of colour, because she has an identity that she's a minority ethnic person. So how is that consistent? You either get rid of it all and say it's all a social construct, and of course, you know, it is all a social construct to a degree, but the while there's that structural power, you can't, because we all become people being horrible to other people, and we lose our entire reason for being feminist and trying to dismantle patriarchy.
I just wanted to bring up a point about a difference between oppression and discrimination. There's a lot of talk about how trans women are oppressed, or how trans people are oppressed, particularly trans women. And I don't see how trans women are, as a class, oppressed by anybody. I see trans women as suffering from discrimination, as suffering from homophobia. To some degree, we suffer from misogyny as well. I mean, homophobia is related to misogyny. But there is a distinction between oppression and discrimination. Discrimination can be positive. Oppression is always negative. Oppression always works on an identifiable class of people to the benefit of another party. And the effect of oppression is always long-lasting. And I think it's important to draw that distinction between oppression and discrimination. I think it's important. I don't think it is inherently oppressive to say to trans women, or I don't think trans women are inherently oppressed by not being able to wear a dress or whatnot. And if we do feel oppressed by our choice of sartorial elegance because of the amount of grief that we get when we walk down the street, let's be brave and name the agent. It's always men that causes the problem.
And yeah, it's feminists that get blamed for it. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Okay.
Ruth,
sorry.
How was the
question? Sorry, Ruth had her hand up earlier.
I just wanted to be clear as well that although there's not that many people who speak out publicly about this stuff, there are lots of people who agree with us.
Yes.
Loads and loads. And we know that because, you know, for example, one member of the Radfem Collective is at a university, student at university. She's had posters with her photo put up all around university saying TERF and swear all over it, and been really bullied because of her involvement as a radical feminist and with Radfem Collective. But she also gets people coming up to her privately who are students saying, oh, you know, I do agree with you about that, or I agree with that point you made. But they're not going to say it publicly because they don't want bullied.
Yes.
Similarly, you know, I ran on Facebook a radical feminist theory group, and when I'm talking to women who apply, the amount who say they're academics, but they're using a false name because if even being a member of that group would get them, you know, massive hassle, and they don't want that. So, you know, there's both sort of academics, students, there's lots of people out there who think this is a lot of nonsense, but who won't say it.
But
which is why I actually think it's really important that those of us who can say it,
yes,
do say it, that we do say, you know, this is a load of nonsense, that we should be fighting for women and girls, and that the whole kind of transgender theory is ultimately anti-feminist.
There's a great new website. I think on Twitter, she's Rosie Redstocking. Anyone know?
Yeah.
And she set up, I think he's Young Radical Feminist. And I mean, you know, how you define young, I don't know. I think it's quite broad. But and I'm sure that if you wanted to kind of be part of it and join in on the discussion, that would be, you would be welcome, whatever your age. And she did it because she's a student in one of the trendy London universities who had to sit listening to all this TERF and SWERF stuff, and you know, how she was transphobic just by wanting to listen to the views of other feminists, and recognising also that a number of men who identify as men have key positions in feminist societies, etc., etc. And so she set this up with the support of some other radical students. Or they're not necessarily all radical feminists, but they're just sick of being abused and bullied in this way when they want to talk about other issues. And she told a very horrific but quite funny story about how she was labelled turf and swerf when she said at her feminist society, which she's since been thrown out of, a group of about 20, "Have you read anything that Julia Bindle's written?" And to a person, everyone that wanted to know platform, he said, "No, why should we have to invoke such violence and hatred upon ourselves and be triggered and be traumatised?" None of them had read anything at all. Not even the one where I said my dog looks like Princess Diana. Shouldn't offend anyone except for the royals and my dog, of course. So I agree with Ruth. I think the more that we that can speak out about it do, and that, but we find ways to enable younger women to get support when they do, because they'll all be bullied. But actually, it's not the end of the world, because feminists are always bullied anyway. It's bullied by men, bullied by patriarchy. And this is just another backlash.
Can I just go to Rebecca? You had your hand up.
I wanted to say that I feel like, I mean, I think that I was in Rotherham this week talking about teenage sexual exploitation. And I think, you know, that the whole thing is one of the things that I said is that we allow the oppressor to lead us. You know, we allow them to lead us. And I feel that this is all kind of, even though they talk about trans, it's really all led by the sex trade lobby, mm-hmm. trying to get us to speak in a certain way and think in a certain way. And, you know, when I was prostituted, it was, when you talk about the female body, that's what they wanted, was a female body. They didn't give a shit about who I was as a person or anything, or, you know, all of that. And I feel that the vast majority of prostitutes in the world are women. That is, and to deny that, it is an act of violence in itself, to be honest, you know, because it's like, you're allowing them to be raped, you're allowing them to, you know, you're just sort of saying, let's just like say that. And that's why they invent words like sex work. That's why they invent concepts like choice. I mean, you know, choice was a real concept before they came along. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and so I'm feeling really, I've had a really bad night, so I'm not sure whether, but one of the things is that I feel that when I was talking about teenage sexual exploitation, I feel that we have to remember that in the real world, girls are being sold because mm-hmm. they have a vagina, mm-hmm. because they have, you know, because men want to fuck the vagina. That's what they want to fuck. They don't, they're not, you know, yes, there are some men prostitutes and there are some trans prostitutes, but the vast majority of the market is female.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That's a really important point, Rebecca, isn't it? Because they are the same lobby and they feed from each other. And by lobby, I mean, let me be really clear, I don't mean transgender people. I mean this group of, I think I've identified about a dozen of them, who are all male to female trans women, who are keyboard warriors. They sit on Twitter and other social media for most of the day, all highly privileged, highly educated, deeply misogynistic and anti-feminist, and are leading this entire debate on social media, which has a huge impact on the real world outside of social media. And that's what we need to remember, that there are far more of us than there are of them, and we need to stop capitulating to their bullying. But another point about your absolute truth about the sex industry, Rebecca, is that I was in Hamburg recently doing some research on the sex trade, and went into some legal brothels, because the sex trade is totally legalised in Germany, which is an abomination. And these places were horrific. They were kind of like disused council blocks, council flat blocks, where each floor had a particular specialism, where men, and it's always men, all the clients are men, don't believe what you say about this, women are paying for sex shit, it's rubbish. And each floor advertises the women as, you know, they'll do anal, they'll do sex without a condom, they'll do this, they'll do that. And the men trip up and down as if it's some kind of, you know, there's a menu for them to view. And there's a floor, every one of these brothels has a floor for trans women to be bought and abused by men. And the abuse that is doled out to the trans women in the sex trade is utterly feminised abuse. So it's men wanting to abuse trans women in a very, very masculine way, debasing that person as a feminine object, which of course is debased and seen as horrific. Now, I reckon I could have gone around every single door to every individual brothel where there was a trans woman behind the door being prostituted and asked, are you a happy hooker? Are you fighting for the rights of sex workers to redefine sex workers' labour? And I bet you I know what the answer would be, and it definitely wouldn't be yes. It definitely would be that this is the abuse by men on trans women, which is utterly feminised, and it all comes from the same misogyny. The point that Miranda made earlier is absolutely right. This is male violence, and we see it in gay male pornography, where the bottom is, you know, a young, skinny, often Latino, Hispanic, young man of colour, who is feminised by the top, which is a rugged brute of a man. That's what it comes down to. It's all about the feminine and the masculine in a way that is very detrimental to women. So why on earth we're eroticising it and celebrating it, I do not know.
Do you want to say something?
Yeah. I'd like to support the point that Judy's made. There is a wider issue within the people who are spearheading the transgender movement at the moment, and the behaviour that is exhibited and the positions that are being put forward are all to, I hope this doesn't cause offence to anybody in the room, but it's essentially men behaving or advocated behaviour in the way that men see how women should behave, and it is this very, very feminised form of submission, and that a lot of the power behind the transgender movement is fueled by pornography and this support of sex workers' rights and whatnot. And a lot of the transgender movement, a lot of it is fetishizing womanhood, and I think this is a significant problem, because you don't come between a man and his boner. He ain't gonna like that.
Kate, you had your hand on that one. Go to you, Julia.
I think one thing we're going to be having you talked about, is the currency that, as I see it, which is male approval. It's male supremacist approval that's currency here. And then what worries me is why the university students in particular are so complicit in all of this. And I think that's to do with the new format of identity, the social conformity, which is like massive pressure to conform, and it's enforced through bullying the way it's always been. But the currency, the golden, sorry, that's a bad idea, but the thing that they want is male approval. It seems to be quite obvious. So, you know, for guys that grow up male, socialised as men, who are unsuccessful in garnering male approval, can perhaps imagine that it's easier to get male approval by doing femininity instead. And you know, as a gender, largely gender non-conforming woman, you know, it's very difficult to get any. You get a lot of you know, oppression, rejection, discrimination, and attitude, basically, of folk that don't see you as full humans or identified.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Jude?
Well, I think I wasn't going to say this, but just as a result to reply to you, I think it's actually very hard to be totally gender conforming without just about destroying yourself, even when you think you're trying very hard to be. I say that personally, I suppose. So it's very actually destructive because, you know, you can never be. Taking the bottom. I don't want the word is degrade yourself, but you can never creep so low to satisfy everybody. Do you know what I mean? You just have to. So I gave up on that a long time ago. But what I just wanted to raise, I don't know what I want people to do or say about this, is, but I help organise Sheffield Feminist Network, and two sex, and they're called, I hate this phrase, sexual entertainment venues, the lap dancing clubs, Villa Mercedes and Spearmint Rhino, they're licensing. They came up for relicensing recently, so some of us who I guess belong to the network and were feminists, so we kind of would that got together and sort of discussed the grounds on which we could object and objected, and there's an absolute, it's only a few people, but a few people have caused a bit of a storm on the Feminist Network Facebook page, because we're not pro-sex workers. Did we think about the fact we'd be doing these women out of jobs? Did we consult with the women and ask their views? And we're not feminist or pro-women. And, you know, there's one woman who says she is a sex worker. I think she's a lap dancer. She's made a very good choice and she's very happy with things, and how dare we determine what she does? I don't think she works in those clubs. And so this has opened a huge can of worms. And now another thread that's come up on the Facebook page is all about porn. And we don't get many men commenting on the page. But strangely enough, we've had two men commenting and basically saying porn's okay, what's the problem? And it makes me choke that I help in any way to get this network going, and in any way allow that to be voiced. And unless some brave person wants to shoot those comments down, they'll just be left, and I don't want to Facebook, and I don't want to fight this fight. So you know, that's, and I'm trying to hold a whole, well, not me personally, but a group of us are trying to keep the network together, because we're actually, there's enough of us, we're starting to make an impact in the structures within the city with the council, and getting funding to actually do stuff to try and stop women being raped and women being killed. And meanwhile, we're in La La Land, where a woman, you know, who wants to be a sex worker demands that we support her right to do what she never asked me if she could do it in the first place. I thought it was a brilliant idea, but I've got to support her doing it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And this is the terrible practical situation that we're in, and it just makes me despair.
Can I add to that? Because I've been contributing to this, and it's like a pack mentality. And the reason a few of us have tried to respond, but it's, I mean, I can totally relate to what you've been kind of hinting at. It's bullying, and some of us just don't want to have to deal with it, which I feel terrible about. But it's nasty stuff, and it's not a reason to debate. We're not sharing ideas with each other. It's just plain old bullying. Not productive at all.
Linked to that, recently, we're from Essex and I live in Southend. I spent 6 hours in a licensing application meeting for a lap dancing club, the sole objector who turned up, and I sat there for 6 hours because I don't like that Facebook bullying stuff, so I thought, I'm not going to have anything to do with that. I'll do it the proper route, and I'll object to the council, and then I'll quote their Equality Act at them, and that'll show them. And I sat there and I listened to this absolute nonsense, and I think the high point was, I said, I'm representing the Essex Feminist Collective, and one of the councillors said to me, I've never heard of the Essex Feminine Collection.
And I was just like, and I was like, yeah, it's not quite that.
Did you change your name after that?
Yeah. And I was like, this is a range of products. but that was kind of like what I was dealing with and it was a heavily male panel, all white, all much older than me. And I was having to explain such basic principles that the objection was based on. And there's very little you can object on because it can't be anything moral. So when I was objecting on location, and the core of my argument was that it was near Frankie and Benny's, and that's what the whole thing had to hinge on. Children go to Frankie and Benny's. Obviously, the licence got granted. Anyway, we've now got four lap dancing clubs in Southend. And just a couple of the things the guy said, who was going for the application. He said his would be different because men with money were going there and men with money are more respectful to women.
And this was
all said in a public meeting where I live in a lovely little world like this, you know, where everyone thinks the same as me and I very rarely venture into the world. So I was like, oh, everyone's gonna respond. Nothing. I said, and I got to ask questions, which was the highlight. And I said to him, you've mentioned how your club is going to be different. These rich, respectful men are going there. I said, but what goes on inside? How is that going to be different? How's your pole dancing different to the three other venues we've already got? And he said, I'd say my girls, because it's always girls, of course, it wasn't girls. Women. My girls, 8 out of 10. Other places, probably about 5. And so then I was like, right, that's got to be nothing, no reaction. And, you know, 6 hours later, I came out there completely thinking, what is the point of us having these objections when the people who make the decision have absolutely no understanding of what it is you're even asking them to consider? Mm-hmm. And when I wrote to the council and I said, I really need to know about what equality training you are giving to members of the council, because they're just people, aren't they? Anyone. And that was maybe a month ago. It took them a month to give me a written response to the application. You know, the whole process is set against us trying to do anything.
And around that, you've got that culture of bullying that Nikki was talking about. I've stayed off that Facebook thread because I've just had so much abuse from local feminists who aren't TERFs, WERF, bigots.
So that's something you get at Harvester, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the turf swirls.
How dare you defend Julie Bindle, you know, that hate monger violence.
Is that the thread where they were putting fluffy kittens on so no one had to look at my article? Which was nothing to do with anything. It was just about violence against women, you know, that little sideline.
So it is impossible even to have a dialogue about it.
Did you have your hand up again? Did you want to speak? I'm just picking up.
Sorry,
I wanted to.
I'm
taking you back off onto trans though. If I go now, because what I was going to say was, if you can't point as female sex as the mark of a woman, then you also erase sex dysphoria. You know, in the new politics, because a lot of sex dysphoria focuses on the biological anatomy. So there's no point in transition either if you can't mark out, you know, women's bits as being like, you know, what they're currently said to be. Then there's no point in saying you've got sex dysphoria, because obviously when trans women transition, they don't want to take on femininity, they want to take on the parts as well. So the parts become redefined as female then if they're transitioning male to female. So really the idea that we can't talk about periods and vaginas, so I'll say it now, you know, as women, sort of does reverse sex dysphoria if the dysphoria is focused on the parts. So it's better for trans women as well in the end.
Okay, sorry, Jude.
I'm in a row now. On this ghastly Facebook thing, some people who are clearly the group that Hannah is talking about, have said, oh, you can't, and don't bring morals into it. Well, I'm not a philosopher. Aren't morals simply the values by which we all consciously or unconsciously live our lives by? Isn't morals it? It's the choices that we make. But if they're now saying another way that they're blurring all the boundaries is to say, oh, you can't be moralistic, so you can't choose what's a better way to live and what's a not so good way to live, it completely gives people no grounds on which to think, categorise, judge.
They're not thinking. They're being told what to say and what to believe and what not to say. And from what I hear of students now, it's beyond horrific. It's, as you pointed out, your experience. If you in any way digress from a set of written rules about what you believe in and what you'll toe the line on, then you are punished, severely punished. And that's why we need to find a way around it and find ways to support feminist students and allies to speak out and not have to run away from this. I mean, it's just so appalling the way that most lecturers aren't even supporting any critical thought and debate. And I think part of that, which is a wider discussion, is that now education is a commercial product. So you, therefore, it's like getting your converse. You know, you can say exactly what you want, what you don't want. When you give me a lecture, I don't want you to offend me by giving a different view to the one that I want to hear. And it's completely different from those of us that were lucky enough to go to university before all this shit, where you would just be offended and it would make you think.
Yeah. And lecturers are mocked, aren't they? You know,
that's
you
right.
You get assessed and then, you know, you're as a lecturer, I expect you get fed back to by the head of the department and compared, but then the whole department or the course gets marks. So if you're politically not correct, you may well get crap marks, and that may count towards your academic professional future as well, which is dreadful.
So they're towing the line. There was a really interesting article about I'm a liberal professor, did anyone see that? It was doing the rounds on social media, really well written, by a male lecturer who found that there was a complaint against the usual, you're being transphobic, and because of the complete indivisibility now of race, sex work and transgenderism, because lots of white trans women talk about race constantly as a stick to beat white feminists with. He was just utterly terrified of getting another complaint and maybe losing his job, and he found himself becoming less and less challenging, more and more capitulating, and he was scared of the students. And I think this is reflected across academia at the moment.
Well, it isn't. After several of the signatures on that observer letter, the first observer letter about the no platforming of radical feminists, there were several women who signed that who had campaigns run against them in their institutions of higher education, from students, from other staff, trying to get them sacked for putting their name to a letter
about free
speech.
Yeah.
That is where we're at. Someone else had their hand. Sorry, yes.
I just want to say something positive. also from Essex, which I suppose, especially after your experience, might think is not a hotbed of radical feminism. But actually,
oh no, at least they didn't stop me from going. I mean, they supported me being there.
But what I was going to say is that actually, our collective, we found that we have had influx of younger women and women students from Essex University who have just found what is going on at Essex University just so appalling. And interestingly, they would say that it's been triggered by men who are in the feminist society.
Absolutely.
I mean, what is that about? So the fact that we exist has been really good for them, and they have come to us. But when we first started out, which was only about a year and a half ago, we didn't have any idea that it could be so vicious when it comes to the issues around women's spaces.
We soon found out.
We did, you know, about a few months in, and it was terrifying. But actually what we learned from that was we just needed to be really clear about what our stance was on women's spaces, on prostitution. And once we set that out, we lost a few, but actually we gained a lot more.
That's a really good
and
point.
We don't get into that debate just doesn't happen.
And our Facebook page as well, that's also a women-only space that people have to ask to come into it. And the only thing that we do is
because you know we do get quite a lot of men who say, no, sorry, you know, if you want to have a feminist discussion, please go and start that.
Yeah,
fantastic, do that. But this is the women only space. And once we've kind of set those boundaries, then all that.
But I know this is a little point. How do you know they are women?
Because
well, we check their
profiles. And obviously, that's not. It's not going to be completely.
But at least it's
out a lot. But it does keep out a lot of the shit.
And you've got that kind of removing someone from the group anyway. So we feel we've been told. Which is
well, we've now drawn up some rules about being nice, kind to each other, and generous-hearted. Ho ho. So that's a challenge. So we're just seeing how it goes.
A bit of me that says maybe we need. Anyway, get angry again in the way that we used to do. Anyway, sorry, that's it.
Yeah. But if people would like to put their comments on our Facebook page, please do, because so far it's swayed one way.
Mm-hmm. Shall we, I think Lisa, you had your hand up then. Shall we have another 10-minute break, then come back for the last half hour? Is that okay?
Can I just say something quick before the break?
Yeah.
After Lisa's thing.
Sorry?
Thank you for after Lisa, it's fine.
Lisa, yeah.
I don't think I was going to say anything particularly useful, except that at various points in the discussion, and I feel strangely depressed and a bit shaky right now. Wonder why. But there's something for me about developing mechanisms for using information and facts. So when you say, as you said to Leslie, oh well, you know, men with money treat women better, I could give you a whole load of stats that show up from work with offenders in forensic settings and all. So that's the sort of thing. And I was also thinking about a debate not too long ago in this very room where an academic from the university came and she was doing some work about harassment in the streets. She talked about stalking. And she said that one of the questions in the research study that they'd put to the ethics committee was whether or not they could ask whether their men who'd been stalking had been masturbating. And the ethics committee said no. And it was basically along the lines of, that might be offensive or upsetting. So how do we...
What?
Yeah, exactly. And I know, people who work forensically will know, that if a man is masturbating and stalking you and probably saying things that are very, you know, homophobic or sexist or whatever, he's probably going to be a rapist.
Yes. Yeah,
probably.
Exactly.
Probably we can evidence that scientifically, empirically, factually. So where's the space for putting the facts in? I know it's a plea for something different that we haven't yet got. This is absolutely appalling, but we have got weapons and armoury and knowledge and information as women, as feminists, and as organisations supported by feminists.
Yeah.
So
there
is something for me about how can we transform this into... I mean, absolutely appalled by what you've said, and I also how do we bring women, those younger people in? But it's about the broader political class. It is about neoliberalism and capitalism. It's all of that. So I'm sorry for making a statement rather than a question.
No, don't be sorry. No, it's really important.
Before the break.
It's all part of it. It's all part of this wider McCarthyism.
Yeah.
That you will get shot down for saying certain things. You can't have debates around certain issues. Even if you talk to somebody, I'm friends with Julie, I mean, you know, I'd get abuse over that, as do a lot of other women and students, as you highlighted earlier, a student who tweets out an article that you've written is then thrown out of her feminist society.
I am worth it, though, to be
So, Ruth, and then we'll take a 10-minute break, then we'll come back for half an hour. We've got the room till 4 o'clock.
I just wanted to say really quickly, just in case anybody shoots off early, that this event was organised by Radfem Collective. There's three of us here today from Radfem Collective, me, Helen, and Tracy over there. Radfem Collective is a national radical feminist group. And we organise different events and campaigns. So if you're interested in anything, we've got a Facebook group, we've got a website, we've got a conference coming up in September that we've got Julie Bindle and Janice Raymond coming to, and Betty McClellan from Australia as well is coming. And we've organised as well, you know, Radical Feminist Weekends Away, stuff like that. So if you want to know more, you can go to our website, join our mailing list. And also there's a social after this, so if anybody was thinking of, you know, I'll sneak off 5 minutes, if you wanted to stay, you know, socialise about that, you know, please do. Okay.
Thank you.